for a second, please.
This is a culture clash, plain and simple.
Well, how do you think you are talking to me like that?
I resent the fact that your implication that only you are a Canadian.
All right, let's get busy, kids. It's that time, Tuesday mornings after 9. We've got the Culture Clash, and today in the studio with us, the Reverend Dr. Scott Mass, an associate pastor at the Westminster Chapel in Toronto, and Justin Trottier, spokesperson for the Canadian Secular Alliance. Good morning to both.
Good morning to both of you.
You know, Justin, before we got started, you were actually saying that you are familiar with Nate Phelps, the son of Fred Phelps, the notorious founder of the Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas, who is apparently, according to his son Nate, on his deathbed. This was, I guess, something he posted on his Facebook page early on Sunday morning to announce that his father was, quote, on the edge of death at Midland Hospice House in Topeka. Now, Nate Phelps, he left this extreme Christian sect, I guess, several years ago, and he's now with your organization.
That's right. He left actually 37 years ago.
Wow.
And he is now one of several children and grandchildren who have been fleeing the Westboro Baptist Church more and more in recent years. Nate broke the story over the weekend that his father was apparently on his deathbed. He also broke a story back in August that, and this is ironic, apparently Fred Phelps was displaced as leader of the Westboro Baptist Church. And there was a power struggle involving one of his daughters who had assumed essentially the spokesperson role for the church in the last several years. And now a group of male elders has taken charge. But Nate left the church years ago and has become a spokesperson actually for the gay rights movement. He's come out as an atheist and he works for the educational charity, the Center for Inquiry, trying to undo some of the damage that his father and his father's church has been responsible for.
Well, yeah, and the Westboro Baptist Church are known, I guess, for some of the stunts that they pulled, including picketing returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan with their banners, God Hates Fags. This is the reason that, these people are killed in military duty overseas because of retribution the Lord is visiting upon a wicked nation. The Phelps engendered this, what some would say is full-on hate, bigotry, and all the rest of that, although they have a First Amendment in the states that allowed them to say it. I suppose it's one of these questions, you know, truly philosophical. Is he to be condemned or more to be pitied than scorned, Scott?
Well, I think the man gets universal opprobrium from one and all, more or less. I, as a Christian, do not really regard this man as a representative of the Christian faith. He hardly speaks he certainly doesn't represent anyone that I know. Quite frankly, I don't even know what to do with this story. A man who is, quite frankly, not recognized by Christians, who is hated by those who aren't Christians, is dying. So what? He's dying. I mean, I don't know what to do with this. Whether we should forgive him?
Should you give him a Christian burial?
Well, he's been excommunicated from the church that he acknowledges that he founded, which would say to me that he does not get a Christian burial, actually. No.
Actually, this is what's ironic. He was apparently excommunicated because he had made some suggestions that the church should be more open and friendly to each other, mind you, to fellow members of his very small congregation. Mm. He actually had been found to be too friendly, not assertive enough, not hateful enough, frankly, for his church. So there's kind of an irony to the end of his life, which is actually, of course, quite sad. But I think the question for me is, those who were harmed by him and by his church, what is the response? Do we fight fire with fire? Do we picket his own funeral, which is what I've heard some suggest? Or do we break that cycle of hatred? Do we respond in other ways? Do we look out for the well-being, for example, of the children? There are still young people who are associated with this church who are being indoctrinated into this. What do we do about them?
Well, that's a good question because, I mean, what you hear in the New Testament, the directive is to turn the other cheek. And do you in this case? I mean, a guy like that who's, you know, and I get where he might have tried to soften his stance. Some might say a deathbed conversion of sorts. Mm-hmm. Are those ever credible, by the way, Scott, the deathbed conversion?
Sure, there are. There's such a thing. It happens rarely. I don't know what the conversion would be and what exactly, as far as the general public goes, those who have been offended by him, what precisely, what standard, what would they be restoring him to? I mean, would he be the you know, the fuzzy hug of everyone. I mean, he would be restored to that by repentance to what standard? To what God? I just don't even know what the terms mean there. We could forgive him. Well, what does that mean? I don't know. I don't even understand the terminology or the discussion.
So no
frankly.
Statement needs to be made here sort of in his passing. Nobody needs to punctuate the point and stomp on his grave. Just let it go.
If they want to stomp on his grave, they can do that as well. As far as I'm concerned, I think that's treating somebody with contempt even when they're dead. And I would say that that ought not to be done anymore. When he was doing such things, I thought it was disgusting and outrageous. To do the same to him would be equally so, because he's a man who bears God's image. But on the other hand, aside from that, I don't see what's
going
on.
No, I agree with you, Scott. I mean, I could certainly understand the sentiment behind those who want to offer scorn and ridicule and give him everything that he deserves as they see it. But I think that that would merely reinforce the idea that that hatred is self-perpetuating, that somehow hatred is a strong or a powerful force in the world. And I really hope that that isn't the lesson that we all take from this experience.
Well, the point is that hatred is self-perpetuating, and that sin is something that not only exists and is endemic in mankind, but that it breeds more sin. And the thing about that this man that I find so offensive is he represents the gospel, which is that everyone is a sinner and that Christ died for their sins. And so it's the gospel of, yes, by all means confronting people with that, but also preaching the gospel, which is that Christ died for sinners. And I've never heard this from this man. He seems not to know the grace and mercy of the Lord Jesus Christ, who he allegedly represents. So I just think, I don't know what to do with this guy. He's been excommunicated for not being strict enough, according to some bizarre standards. I mean, it's a non-church of a man who is a non-Christian, who is now has no understanding of repentance, and he's going to be forgiven by whom?
Well, I don't want to push this point too far, because I'm very happy to see most church-going Christian folks come out strongly opposed to what he's doing. In fact, the various divisions of the Baptist movement have come out and said, you know, the Westboro Baptist Church is Baptist Church in only name. It has really nothing to do with the rest of us. However, some of what he says, he does point out things which are biblical. That for example, homosexuality is a sin.
Oh, I totally
it's going
agree
to
with
be, that.
That
you know, homosexual sinners will be burning in hell and all that kind of nastiness. Much of what he says, it's inconvenient, I think, for other Christians, especially other evangelical and right-leaning Christians, because he's not saying things which actually can't be backed up by reference to the Bible. So I'm glad that Christians have come out strongly against him, but there is that inconvenience to his existence, frankly.
Well, when you said just now, Justin, that he cites the Bible saying that homosexuality is a sin, you agree with that, Scott. But when he says they're going to burn in hell, you agree with that part?
I do.
So, in
unrepentant sin is going to, that's correct. Sin must be turned away from, repented of. Yep.
Damned to perdition. All right. Let me move on, because I got other things to talk about here. You know, we've got the culture clash in effect with Scott Masson and Justin Trottier. Here's another thing that has to do with cultural values in Quebec. You know, their secular charter, much of which is, I guess, accrued to the benefit of Pauline Marois, where the PQ, right now, in a bit of a dogfight with the Liberals there, but if they come to win the election and implement some of the things that they stand upon as their cultural values and principles, this charter, today Marois is saying she would even consider extending it into the private domain, not just the public sector. And so if it goes, I mean, trying to initiate that into the private life so that there are no overt religious symbols being worn, Sikh turban, maybe a kippah or the yarmulke, you know, crosses and things like that. Justin Trottier, does that make, as a secularist, does that make any sense to you?
She's just doubling down, I think, on the wrong interpretation of secularism. And I've been very clear. My position is that, for me, secularism is about the state's neutrality. It's not about pushing atheism or pushing secularism on individuals. Individuals should have freedom to express their secularism or their religious identity as they wish. What should be secularized are arms and institutions of the state. So it's ironic that, for example, there's still a crucifix up in the National Assembly in the Quebec Legislature Hall. That's not being talked about, taken down. They're still providing, this is particularly ironic, public subsidies, 60-70% subsidies to private faith schools. but teachers in public schools will not be able to wear religious symbols. So they're not looking at the actual establishment of religion and the support it gets from the state in terms of these institutions, but they're targeting individuals who should have full freedom of expression.
Well, I don't see what the contradiction is, actually. I mean, the former liberal leader, Michael Ignatieff, just last year wrote a piece in which, and I'll quote here, he said, sovereignty is prior to law because there has to be a founding moment that creates the law. Now, this is the understanding of the liberal humanist, which I believe that my friend here represents, which sees the state as the source of all law and sovereign over law, and it creates the law. It's not bound by law. It's not bound by any rules other than its own sovereignty. So for the state to arbitrarily decide to do this and not that is in accordance with the principle that established the law. Now, this is not a Christian understanding of law because we understand that God created all things, he gave us law, and we all stand under his moral law. But if we turn around and decide that we're going to be the sovereigns that create law, and Pauline Marois, as the head of her state, or province in this case, wants to create laws, then there's nothing standing in the way of that.
We can debate political theory if you want. We'd be here for a while, but I think
whatever
different political theory you want to bring in, whether it's utilitarian based theory that looks at what's in sort of the best interest for the population at large, or whether it's more libertarian approaches, both of those would agree on the centrality of certain fundamental freedoms. And I would say freedom of expression.
What's the basis of law?
Is the basis freedom of religion, freedom of association? These come from freedom of expression. So I think
They come from biblical law, actually. You're appealing to things that you yourself deny.
They predate biblical law.
No, they do not.
There are various strands of legal and political theory that come from Germanic pagan traditions, that come from Greek pagan traditions, and, yeah, that come from Christian traditions. And all of these come together modern understanding
of
political theory.
Equality is a biblical concept.
Why did it take, then, about 1,500 or 1,600 years before democracy emerged in Europe? Why, throughout most of European history, when Christianity dominated the continent, was it anything but democratic?
Because it took that long for Christians to prevail in their pagan cultures and to crush the paganism under its feet.
So the pagans were dominating Europe until the Enlightenment?
I think the influence of paganism prevailed up until that point.
All right, hold that thought. I wanted to come back and see if the state has any business in telling parents how to conduct their affairs when it comes to vaccinating their kids. Not so far a stretch here. There's a measles outbreak in BC's Fraser Valley. And some kids showing up at school with measles, and the contagion spreads. What do you say to parents who won't vaccinate? Is it time to start penalizing them and forcing them to get their kids vaccinated? All in the name of public health and the social good. We're coming back with our Culture Clash in effect, and we'll take some calls on that note as well.
This is a Culture Clash, plain and simple.
All right, back into it with the Culture Clash. Dr. Scott Masson and Justin Trottier in the studio. And, gents, I want to talk about something else that involves, I guess, a form of social engineering. But is it for the general good and public safety? We've just seen, for example, in this province where we are about to increase fines for distracted driving up to $1,000, demerit points, and so on and so forth. Again, with the explanation or rationalization, it's for the public's good. There have been various contagions that have spread, measles outbreaks in Alberta, Quebec, and now in BC's Fraser Valley. And some people are promoting the notion that we should, in the interest of the public good and safety of children primarily, we ought to force inoculations. In other words, parents who are reluctant to do so should face similar penalties that you might get for putting people in harm's way with traffic, not wearing a seatbelt, smoking in public, that kind of thing. We always have these kinds of what we call deterrent modifiers, right? They modify behavior. Justin Trottier, I'll start with you. I mean, when it comes to vaccinations, highly contentious issue. There is that sort of parental prerogative, but does it make sense that parents should be forced to vaccinate their kids for things like mumps, rubella, and measles?
Well, it is a serious issue. I mean, this is a life and death issue. Let's be clear. In 2010 in California, 10 children died of whooping cough. And it was tied to a cluster of kids who had not been vaccinated. So we do have to find some solution. Now, I don't know how much I would suggest how far to push a coercive approach. I think it is correct that public schools and other public institutions, public hospitals, et cetera, do require that kids be vaccinated to participate. If you don't want to put your kid in a public school, you want to homeschool your kid, that's one thing. But if they're going to participate in a public institution, then I think public health does become the overriding concern. And in cases like measles, which is highly contagious, something like 90% of people in a community who are not vaccinated will catch it if there is an outbreak in that community. We're seeing that happening in BC. There was something recently in Ottawa and in other places. Then I think given that level of threat where you need to have something like 95% of the community vaccinated to have proper what they call herd immunity, that, yeah, the public health benefit does override most other concerns.
Well, first of all, I vaccinate my daughter. Let me start by saying that. But I would say that the storm over this, which I've seen has now taken over the Globe and Mail and various other alleged representations of national opinion, seem to me to be working through a bifurcated, morally disturbed lens. On the one hand, not to bring this in, but whether they're going to allow abortion on demand, an absolute right to choose in that case, and we're not going to be concerned about the murder of the unborn, on the one hand. On the other hand, we're going to be concerned about parents that choose not to vaccinate their children. And the logic of this is that, you know, children might die from that, but it's only the children of those who have the children and don't vaccinate them. Those who are vaccinated are not going to be threatened by the fact that these children haven't been vaccinated. So the real issue here is that of, really, it seems to me, the sovereign messianic state. Should the state be charged or responsible for the good of everybody that resides within it? Is that its role? And most people in Canada think that the state is responsible for everything.
But there are, I don't want to interrupt you, I'm sorry for that.
That's okay.
But there are other approaches that can be taken that are not, I don't know how you'd say it, educationally coercive rather than actually, you know, legislatively coercive. So, for example, Health Canada right now actually approves homeopathic and other so-called naturalistic alternatives to vaccines, including homeopathic vaccines, which have no effectiveness at all.
No, it's
and the message that
quackery.
It's quackery. And the message that that gives is that if Health Canada stamps it with, you know, its approval, then there must be something to it, and maybe this is a valid alternative. Physicians and pharmacists, you know, we talk about the dearth of public trust in professionals, but actually physicians and pharmacists still among the two most trusted professional groups. So they could do more. They could be more honest with their patients.
Well, isn't really the nub of it? It's not so much, you know, that the parents with the kid who isn't vaccinated, that the health department or whomever is advocating for this, they're saying we want to protect the other kids who are placed in harm's way because you've decided to be derelict with your own kids. Go ahead and do that, but don't draw our kids into that sphere.
Not drawn into it, though. They've been vaccinated, so that they don't. So the issue here is those people ought to be forced to vaccinate their children. That's the issue. So they don't acknowledge the legitimacy of the family, and this is typical again of statism. They acknowledge two sources of authority. They acknowledge the state and they acknowledge the individual. And when the individual does something that is harmful to the individual, the state takes over. So once again, and this is a serious problem, and it goes back to what I said about earlier about Ignatieff's comment about sovereignty. He believes that the law itself, the sovereign has to be above the law because the law itself may stand in need of extra legal authority for its defense. So we can even go above law, create new laws in the name of the sovereign. And people think that they ought to be able to impose and force these parents with these children to vaccinate their children. I'm thinking, by what standard? Well, by the standard of our collective will.
You're debating statism. I'm talking about saving children's lives.
The two are not mutually exclusive. Scott's basically saying is he vaccinates his own kids, so if somebody else chooses not to vaccinate their kid, his kid's immune. His kid's protected. And so he's leaving it up to the other parents to make willful decisions, but he doesn't want the state to come in and start telling them how they're going to conduct their affairs.
Correct.
So is he right or wrong?
His kids are innocent, though. They deserve to have life. They deserve to be protected.
Well, first of all, there are reasons to doubt vaccinations. I think there are in many cases.
But you choose to vaccinate your kids.
I do, because in my, some vaccinations, I don't know if I do all the vaccinations, but this is a matter, and vaccinations are increasingly becoming less than useful as well. There's a resistance to
Vaccines are also constantly evolving, too.
Right. Let me take some calls here. Jeff on a 401, what do you say? Is this a public safety issue that the state has to step in and force people to get their kids vaccinated?
No, but this argument is confusing me. Now, if you have children that are vaccinated, they don't get the disease, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if the kids that are unvaccinated, the kids whose parents decide not to vaccinate their children get the disease, isn't it the parents' responsibility? Because
yes.
If my kid is vaccinated, then my kid doesn't get measles. So all the other kids that are getting measles are kids that are not vaccinated because the parents chose not to vaccinate them.
Right.
I don't see why the government should do anything.
Because I'm sorry, these are innocent children. I have to interrupt you here. Infants have died.
Again, this is
okay.
What
young children have
okay,
died.
Okay, but again, Justin, this is
because
what I'm talking about.
Because their parents are making their
moral schizophrenia on this, though,
medical decision for
right,
them.
But you also will sanction abortion upon demand. So again, this is the moral schizophrenia.
Did I ever say that?
Well, do you think that there ought to be restrictions on abortion, Justin?
I think there should be laws on abortion. I don't think that those laws should
make abortion
illegal. Do you push
for them? I mean, you're up
illegal.
In arms about parents deciding for their children's well-being, but you're not going to push against abortion?
Actually, what I've said very clearly here and in other venues about vaccination is I do not favor a legislative approach. I favor an educational approach. I was talking
right,
about
where
having
it doesn't
physicians
work, it's
be
educated,
more upfront
where
about
the people,
vaccination.
Despite the wealth of information and the public health officials are all coming out in unison saying vaccinations do prevent the disease, obviously the education hasn't gotten through, or at least there's something
right.
countervailing that where they're listening to Jenny McCarthy on the internet.
Sure.
So at the end of the day, you're saying it shouldn't be parental prerogative, it should be the state that comes in and tells them they got to get their kids vaccinated.
I think first we need to try more assertive kinds of education, which we're not doing. And I gave the example of Health Canada, which sends mixed messages. I would rather reform that. I'd rather have physicians and pharmacists not skirting around the issue of homeopathy, but being upfront, this is science, this is
right,
pseudoscience.
When Health Canada adopts non-science as science, it creates a credibility gap. I agree on that.
All right, let me grab a call. Mike and Markham, go ahead. You're on the Oakley Show.
Okay, first of all, excuse me, Justin, you're way out of order here. Listen, you don't tell me what I'm going to put in my children's arm. This stuff is poison. You're now creating an MMR shot with three vaccinations in one. The mercury levels are through the roof.
Right.
We tell our people not to eat tuna because of mercury,
mm-hmm.
and you're telling me an infant is going to put 45 times the mercury in their body to be vaccinated for three different vaccinations? Mm. Not going to happen.
Mm.
So this is the problem. We had a friend who with their child got the MMR shot, about 2 days later developed a very high-grade fever.
Right.
Never, ever recovered.
Right.
About a month later, autism. Autism set in.
Right.
The child was never the same. So you're telling me, you know, Jenny McCarthy, you label these people as fanatics, whatnot. That's the label you give them.
Actually, I didn't use that word at all.
You did. There is validity.
You
need to do the research and get educated. No.
So when we disagree, it's because I haven't done the research. It can't
Absolutely.
Just be that there's an honest disagreement.
Absolutely.
No, I think there's an honest disagreement,
and it's
your prerogative, callers, to do what you've done. I agree.
There was one article that was published in The Lancet in the 90s by Wakefield, which tried to argue that there was this connection between the vaccine and autism. He has now been removed his medical license has been removed.
Of course
let me just finish, please. I'll let you finish. That research was discredited. He's made about $500,000 by being in the payroll of lawyers who have fought litigation because of this false link between vaccination and autism. Parents
right.
have taken out litigation. He's made money off of this. He's a crook, and he's corrupt.
But based on as much as I've read about it, we've got the medical health people saying that the jury is in on this and the science is no longer open to question. But Mike in Markham, you're saying it very much is in play and you believe there's a link and therefore you choose not to have your child vaccinate. If your child gets measles and goes to school and there are other kids whose parents haven't vaccinated their children and spreads the disease, I mean, in what way do you feel responsible for that?
Well, I wouldn't feel too responsible because it's up to the other parents to, as you said, get educated on the matter. But here's the problem. There is a link. There is a big pharma issue going on here. The second you try and fight these people who back up politicians, who back up the world, you're not going to get anywhere. It's a brick wall. It's a wall you can't climb. So of course his license has been removed. Of course he's been outed.
So anything that happens is consistent with your conspiracy theory approach to this issue.
Can you let me finish? So of course he's now on the outside of the circle because this guy is now pointing out the obvious and he's trying to prove the science. This is big money.
And the hundreds of millions of dollars that he made in being on the payroll of lawyers. That's
all right,
okay
guy, I got to move on. I appreciate your call, Michael. Obviously, there is one who believes it's a parent's prerogative, and he chooses not to vaccinate his kid. Is he being willfully ignorant, irresponsible? Is he just deciding that he wants his own decision based on his knowledge and his education, as opposed to the state making the call for everybody, holus bolus? Cheryl in Milton, what do you say? Good morning.
This has been driving me crazy. I don't know what why all of a sudden there's this huge push. Pretty much every news media out there is talking about vaccines, vaccines, vaccines. I'm with the one gentleman that don't tell me what to put in my child. There is stuff in that product that will absolutely cause changes to the body. And I will say this like I've said before. There are government compensation packages for people who have adverse reactions to vaccines. It happens.
Right.
They are not inertly safe. So I would like, as a parent, to be the one that gets to choose what dangers I'm putting my child in.
Right.
More people killed every day by cars than there would be by a outbreak. Let's take the H1N1. What was there? 5,500 people that died worldwide from this outbreak. It's 5,500 people out of billions.
So right. Hundreds of thousands of people used to die in the U.S. every year from measles and other preventable illnesses, and they don't anymore. So
right, and 100,000 babies are murdered, and the unborn babies are killed every year as well.
On that point, those hundreds and thousands of people are not dying every year because our way of life has improved so much.
That is dead wrong. And I mean it dead wrong. It's vaccinations that have made that difference. It has nothing to do with the environment whatsoever. Vaccinations is the only thing that's different, that's relevant.
Are you going to let me speak? You look at third world countries right now, they have the largest outbreaks of this kind of stuff. Why is that? Because they do not have clean water.
Or vaccinations.
Yeah, they do. They do not.
Not in the places where they have these outbreaks. They do not.
All right, I'm not going to settle it here, but obviously, to Justin's point, you believe these are preventable.
Well, look, I just want a quick rejoinder to what the caller just said. It's the communities where there aren't vaccinations in the UK and in Canada where the outbreaks are happening. The environment's the same. If it were environmental factors, it would happen, you know, randomly. So it's clearly that vaccinations are the deciding factor in terms of whether we save hundreds of thousands of people from an unnecessary death.
All right, guys, we're going to close it off on that note. It's one of those things, once you kind of scratch the surface, it's just like Pandora's box being kicked open. But it's the recent outbreaks in Alberta and Quebec and in BC that have led people to re-examine this phenomenon, and perhaps that's why it accounts for the national push in various media outlets to what Scott that has now taken on added currency or new currency. Guys, I appreciate it. Right. Scott Masson, again, is the associate pastor at the Westminster Chapel in Toronto, and Justin Trottier, spokesperson for the Canadian Secular Alliance. Thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Spirited
Thank you.
Discussion this morning.